Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of Atlantic and Coastal, The Athletic's ACC podcast. I'm Andy Bitter, your Virginia Tech football writer and host of Atlantic and Coastal. Well, the regular season is over, but the work never really stops. This has been the craziest coach hiring season that I have ever seen. I've been a part of it with Virginia Tech. Our guest today on Atlantic and Coastal has been part of it with Miami. We're going to talk about that in the episode, get the all the latest scoop on Mario Cristobal and what's going on with the Hurricanes there. But we also have an ACC champion to talk about in Pitt. We're going to talk about that first. A little bit later in the show, we'll go through the bowl lineup, pick out a game perhaps that intrigues us. We're not going to go through the whole lineup, but we'll pick a game or two that looks intriguing to us. So let's get started. Let's bring in this week. We're joined by Manny Navarro, our Miami beat writer for The Athletic, a very busy man down in South Beach here. Manny, you've come up for air here to join us on the podcast. I appreciate you coming.
I appreciate you having me on. It's funny, the last time you and I spoke and did one of these podcasts, we both were like, okay, what's going to happen with our head coaches? Are they going to make it to the end of the season? And I think we both made predictions, if I'm not mistaken, about who would be coaching this game next year. I think I nailed my prediction, did I not?
Did you? I can't remember if you said, Cristobal or not.
I said Cristobal would be coaching Miami next year.
I said Billy Napier, not knowing that the Florida job would open up and that, right, you know, Florida would big time Virginia Tech and be like, oh, no, we're going to take that coach. You're going to have to go somewhere else. So good job on that. You predict the future. Does that mean your betting picks are going to be correct with the bowl game? Can I count on that?
Maybe. Hopefully I'll do better than the ACC did last year when they went 0-6.
Well, we'll get to that in a bit. I do want to talk off the top about the ACC title game because that was the big game this week in the league. Pitt beats Wake Forest 45-21. Honestly, kind of a dud of a game, wasn't it? You thought this was going to be the year that, like, okay, Clemson's not in it. They're not going to blow out somebody. This could be a really good game between two teams that are very interesting, even if they're not named programs. And then, you know, I'm watching the first quarters back and forth. This is the game everybody expected. Touchdowns aplenty, and then Wake just, the faucet just turned off with fake, with Wake, fake. Maybe that's a
fake
slip.
Fake Wake, there you go.
Wake Forest, 21 points in the first quarter, no points after that. Did not score on their final 13 drives, 295 yards total. What did you think of this game? I mean, I was excited for this game, and then it just kind of stopped being a great game after the first quarter.
I was certainly excited for it, too. I was between phone calls with people in Miami's administration and Mario Cristobal's agents and people on that side of it. I was you know, sort of watching, and all of a sudden I said, man, what happened? Pitt's kicking their ass now. And then I go and I look back and I said, oh, interceptions. That played the big role in that game. And, you know, ultimately, Kenny Pickett, I mean, credit to him for really an unbelievable season. Pat Narduzzi as well. When Miami went up to Pitt and won, I mean, they came out of the gates blazing. They scored, I think, what was it, 21 points or seven? I forget. They had three scores in the first quarter, and I think that's the only reason why they ended up winning that game and beating Pitt, because they got so far ahead of them that, you know, Pitt was playing comeback the rest of the way. But that was a good Pitt team, and they were worthy of winning that championship for sure.
Yeah, they were. I mean, we talk about Kenny Pickett. I'll get to him in a second. I thought the defense for Pitt was really the difference in that game. Four interceptions. That stadium is sort of a house of horrors for Sam Hartman. He had four picks in the Belk Bowl last year against Wisconsin as well. Tough one here. Had a pick six taken back by Eric Hallett. A.J. Woods took one back 75 yards. Got dragged down like the three-yard line or something. Somehow the over did not hit on this game. They scored 35 points in the first quarter. And me, as somebody who had the over at 71.5, I'm looking at the live over-under. It's like 97 or something like that. I'm like, this is easy money. And then it doesn't hit somehow. A little disappointed by that. But this seemed kind of like the Clemson game for Wake Forest, where Pitt's defensive front just created so many problems. and blew up that slow mesh and was all over Hartman in the pocket there, that it just didn't really have a chance to get going offensively after that first quarter. They shut him down. I think I was more impressed by Pitt's defense in this than maybe the offense.
Yeah, and really that's Narduzzi's doing. I mean, we knew they lost a lot of guys off of last year's squad, right? Guys who went to the NFL and graduated, and we thought, okay, maybe Pitt's defense takes a little step back. But as the year went on, those guys kept getting better and better. And that's just a testament to Narduzzi as a coach. I mean, look, yes, Miami scored a boatload of points on them, but after that first half, I think Miami only scored 7 against them and you know, basically held on for dear life to win that game. And so in this instance, you just saw the Pitt defense improve as the year went on. And like I said, to me, they're a worthy ACC champion. Look, we've been spoiled by the greatness of Clemson, right, for 6 straight years with Trevor Lawrence and all the stars that they had. And Clemson still had a great defense this year. But, you know, this is more typical of what an ACC champion should be, a team that's ranked just outside the top 10. Because that's really what this league is. It's teams that really aren't elite. Pitt is good, very, very good, but they're not elite. I think this is a fair representation of the conference this year.
All the more reason to vote for the 12-team playoff. Yes. For the ACC. They got a little too fat and happy with the Clemson run there, and it's like, this is actually more what the league is. Right. Maybe get on board with that 12-teamer and get that going here. Kenny Pickett, Heisman Trophy finalist. Have you wrapped your head around that whole thing? He threw for 253, 2 touchdowns in this game. He also ran for a 58-yard touchdown, did like a fake slide that...
Yeah.
That's got to be illegal, right? They've got to make illegal in the future. I mean, that was like, you saw all the Wake Forest players just like pull up. They're like, oh, he's sliding. And it's like, if he does that, it's like, you should be like, okay, the rest of the game, you can't get a targeting penalty if you hit Kenny Pickett as he's about to slide, because he's already fooled you once like that. That was a crafty veteran move that I expect of somebody who's played 15 years at Pitt, but it seemed highly illegal or like nefarious. They should not allow that anymore.
I'm 1,000% with you. And you know what, Bitter? One thing I will say is we don't need more interpretations of rules, because clearly the referees don't know what they're doing when it comes to that. Look, fake slide you want. I just think ultimately, unless the player is on the ground, you shouldn't be able to hit him, right? I mean, you should be able to hit him, rather. If he's, whether he's faking a slide or in showing the, like, to me, you're still hitting him in stride. That whole rule, sliding, not sliding, once he's on the ground, physically on the ground, you shouldn't be allowed to hit him. After that or before that, whatever, he's free game. The rules need to be changed. They need to be worked on, because, yeah, you're right. That was sort of a dirty but smart play by Kenny Pickett.
Okay, I don't want to detract from Kenny Pickett and his season. I mean, when you're breaking records set by Dan Marino, you're doing something right at Pitt. I mean, going back to the start of the season, could you ever have imagined this for Kenny Pickett? I mean, he's in the Heisman finalist with Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, and Aiden Hutchinson. Hutchinson is perhaps a surprise, because defensive players don't always get up there. But you're talking about the quarterbacks of the two of the premier programs in the country, and then the quarterback at Pitt, who had never thrown, I think, for more than 13 touchdowns in a season before this year. I think that's the stat. And now he throws for 40-plus. That is just mind-blowing to me that he has this kind of success.
Yeah, what's funny is when we did our preseason predictions, remember way back in August before all of this zaniness and coaching hires and all that stuff happened, I actually predicted 2 quarterbacks from the ACC, because I knew this was a good quarterback conference this year. I said there's going to be 2 guys who get to New York for the Heisman. Well, of course, none of them were Kenny Pickett. I had TJ Ungalale and our boy from North Carolina, Sam Howell. I thought for sure. I'm like, these guys are going to put up ridiculous numbers. Clemson's going to be good again, because that's what they are. North Carolina's going to have a great season. Man, was I wrong. Kenny Pickett was clearly the cream of the crop for the ACC. And look, it was a good year for quarterbacks. You can't – there are a lot of guys. I mean, Leary put up good numbers for NC State, 35 touchdowns, 5 picks. Obviously, Van Dyke turned it on late. I thought it was a great year for quarterbacks in the ACC. And he's look, he was the best. There's no question he was the best.
This is how good the year was for quarterbacks. Leary, Howell, Cunningham, and Van Dyke did not make my All-ACC ballot. And, like, I mean, any of them could have been in the top 3, and it would have been understandable. So a very good year for the ACC there in quarterbacks. Pitt, rewarded for this, gets to go to the Peach Bowl to play Michigan State, which would be an interesting game here. Do we think Pitt has any kind of staying power from this season, or is this a 1 year wonder type deal? I mean, their offensive coordinator has already left. Right. Mark Whipple has already left. It sounds like he might go to Nebraska, which I thought was a strange move. I mean, he's 64. I didn't think that he'd be like up and moving at this stage of his career. But obviously, Pickett was so instrumental to the success. You remove the offensive coordinator, remove Pickett, and all of a sudden, could this be a struggle next year?
Yeah, one footnote to all that. One rumor I'm hearing with Whipple potentially going to Nebraska, they might take Miami's Jake Garcia over there. It's one rumor that I've heard anyway that might be the scenario. Well, of course, Jake Garcia's dad played quarterback in Nebraska, so it makes sense. But anyway, I just wanted to put that out there in the realm of thought for those listening. But as far as Pitt's staying power, look, Narduzzi's a great defensive coach. And yes, Whipple made this offense what it was and with Pickett, but I just think every ACC team, I mean, aside from Clemson, who's still recruiting at an elite level, by the way, with Dabo, and we'll see what they do with their coaching staff. I just think like every ACC team right now, if you get them a good quarterback, they have the potential to win the conference and have a 10-win season and go to a major bowl game. You know, they can always recruit this. Wake Forest did it. Hartman was a good quarterback for them, right? I mean, that's what makes the difference between, I think, 10 wins and 6 wins in this conference, really. The bottom line is Pitt, what Narduzzi's doing there with Penn State struggling a little bit this year, I think they're going to do well going forward. They'll be a team that maybe isn't a contender every year to be a top 25 team, but certainly in the conversation, they should be a top 25 team almost every year in my mind.
All right, enough preamble. We have the Miami writer here. Let's talk about Miami. What a week for the Hurricanes. What a couple of weeks for the Hurricanes down there. Mario Cristobal is the coach. Manny Diaz is out. What does this mean for the U? I mean, this is a big deal for this program. You have been writing great stories about it all week. Another one off the introductory press conference the other day with Cristobal. This kind of feels like the dawning of a new age with Miami, or at least a new commitment to football. Tell us a little bit about what this means for that school and that program that was obviously once so proud and then, you know, fell on mediocrity for about 2 decades.
Yeah, look, what's happened at Miami here ever since Kirk Herbstreit called out basically school president Julio Frank on national television after that rough start that Miami had is suddenly everybody in the administrative department said, wait a minute. We can't have people talking crap about our president. We got to get serious about football now, which knowing Miami's history with Tad Foote and the glory days with Jimmy Johnson, Howard Schnellenberger, who thought that the school president would be the guy to come in and save the football program? But essentially, that's what's happened here. It's the complete opposite of the 1980s, where the president was worried more about academics than guys hot-dogging and dancing on the field after a blowout win. It's crazy. The story here has been crazy. It's been a complete shift. And Julio Frank deserves credit for listening to the fan base who's been crying for 2 decades now for somebody to take football seriously over there. Look, Miami's always been that private school who operates on a limited budget, okay? And part of that was not because there wasn't money to spend at Miami. It's because everybody always viewed athletics like, hey, you know what, guys? Great job in the 80s and 90s. Way to win that last title in 2001. But we're in the ACC. You should be able to figure out how to win on your own. We don't need to supplement you with any money here. We don't need to boost up the athletic department budget because you guys are good on your own. And you know, you'll figure out how to recruit. South Florida's loaded. The coach doesn't even matter. We'll get a good coach, not a great coach. We'll get a good coach, and he'll recruit the hell out of South Florida, and you guys will win championships still. Well, guess what? That hasn't worked for the last 17, 18 years. And so essentially what the administration has done because of Herbstreit, I'm giving him most of the credit, is they've said, okay, we need to spend money. And they went out and they look, there are a lot of billionaires in South Florida. I don't know if you knew that or not, Andy. There's a whole bunch of
I saw all the boats and the big houses driving out to my hotel stay in South Beach when I got down there. So, yes, right. I am aware.
And there also is sort of a quote-unquote Cuban mafia, okay, which I, growing up in this city, I'm 43 years old, I'm born and raised in Miami, I almost went to Columbus High, okay? My parents were trying to get me in there when I was a ninth grader to go play baseball. I didn't get in. I screwed up in the eighth grade. I got a bad grade in my physical science class. They didn't let me into Columbus because it was the pristine all-boys school, right, where everybody wanted to go play baseball. Well, Columbus has turned into a football beast, and they've produced guys over the years like Alonzo Highsmith and the Cristobals. They've had some really good coaches come out of there. And so they love their football. They love the University of Miami. And so now you got all these billionaires that are saying, hey, you know what? Yeah, you have the mayor's son coaching. He's not getting it done. We're going to fork over a boatload of money. We're going to back this change. Bring Mario home from Oregon. He's the guy. He's won two championships on the field as a player. He played for Jimmy Johnson and Dennis Erickson. We're going to go back to the old days. Just get him. And part, the most important part of this all is not the hiring of Mario Cristobal, because I think he's a very good coach. Game day coach, you could argue, right? He's had some questionable losses. The most important thing in this entire endeavor has been they are pouring money into the football program and spending on assistant coaches. They guaranteed Mario that they're going to have the highest payroll for assistants in the ACC, which Grace Rayner, our colleague, of course, was able to give me the math. I think it was $8.425 million. What does Virginia Tech spend on assistants?
Well, last year it was like 3.6, 3.8, somewhere in that range. And they've committed to $5.5 million for Brent Pry, the new coach. And everybody at Virginia Tech is like, that's a big deal. That's a lot. That would be second in the ACC, I think, because I think Florida State was around a little over five. I haven't seen the most recent figures with that. The USA Today put it behind a paywall, so it's you can't see it now. Like the irony of me at The Athletic complaining about a paywall on another site. So, yeah, mark that down there. But, yeah, now Clemson was way ahead of the field, and everybody's like, well, that's Clemson. They're going to be like that. And now here comes Miami. That's going to make this financial commitment to this as well. Yeah. So, yeah, it seems like they're serious about football. And that's interesting that you mentioned the president because, you know, I feel like a lot of school presidents just kind of look down their nose at football and, oh, it's not a big deal. But the smart ones understand that, like, this is free publicity for your university. And more applications come in and better applicants come in if the football team is good. Like, I mean, just look at Virginia Tech and the wonders that Michael Vick did here in terms of enrollment and the sort of publicity that comes to the school. So I think it's a smart move by this president to recognize that and pour some resources in this and go get it. I'm curious. I have to ask, and I read something yesterday that you guys were asked not to ask about how this all went down with Mario Cristobal, but I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask the tough question on this podcast to you, not to Mario Cristobal himself. Explain to me how this whole thing went down. Because Miami had a coach, and they were letting him recruit, and they didn't fire him away. And they're just gonna—they were openly chasing another coach, you know, kind of leaving Manny Diaz hanging out on a string for a while there. This coaching carousel is not a pure thing, and I'm not gonna sit here and pretend like it is. But this seemed especially sketchy, even for coach hiring season.
Well, before we go feeling all bad for Manny Diaz, okay, and look, yes, it's not a great situation to be in, especially after what he did the second half of the season, right? Getting those kids to play hard for him, win five out of the last six, get them into a bowl game. Before you go feeling bad for Manny Diaz, remember one thing here. He had 2 years left on that contract, and he's a millionaire, okay? He's walking away with some serious money. And, oh, let's also not forget, Manny Diaz signed on to be Temple's coach 3 years ago, started recruiting for him, brought bunch of kids into Temple, and then backed out and walked away to come take his dream job. So listen, before we go feeling bad for Manny Diaz, understand this is a cutthroat business, and coaches do this to players do this to coaches, and now schools do this to coaches, right? I mean, it's just part of the deal, and we may see this going forward. Look, the bottom line is Miami felt that Manny Diaz was the second best option. And I know originally when all these coaching rumors started, well, what about Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss? He has interest, right? He might come down to South Beach and be tempted by coaching here in South Florida. What about so-and-so? You know, I had a bunch of names people were throwing out there. And what I gathered from the start was it was Mario or bust for Miami. Like, they were going to go hard at the one coach they thought would be the difference maker. And if they swung and missed, they were going to keep Manny Diaz. And I know from a PR perspective, it was going to be a nightmare if that was the scenario. But look at the timeline of what happened. Miami clearly was waiting to negotiate with Mario until after he coached in the Pac-12 title game. He didn't accept the job until Sunday afternoon, didn't sign the contract until Monday. So Miami had to wait until they had a complete and full guarantee that he was coming. And so That's why it happened the way that it did. But don't feel bad for Manny Diaz, other than from, hey, look, this is embarrassing for you as a coach. I think Manny Diaz is going to land a job somewhere else. I think he's going to be a good coach. He did some good things here. I know everybody was upset with the loss to FIU and Duke and, you know, some of the teams that he lost to. There were some underwhelming defeats. But overall, I think he's the guy who's going to rebound from this and get an opportunity to be a head coach again somewhere down the road. And I think he'll do well. He's adaptive. He's smart. It's just Miami needed a guy who, when he walked into living rooms in South Florida to recruit the top players in this city, they needed a guy who could throw rings on the table like Pat Riley. And Mario Cristobal can do that. He can throw rings on the table. Ones that he won as a player, one that he won as assistant coach at Alabama. And hell, I know they're just Pac-12 championship rings, but he's got two of those as well in a Rose Bowl that he won. So that you talk to anybody down here, Andy, that was what was holding Miami back for a while. Mark Richt came in. He commanded some respect. I thought Miami started to do a better job under Mark Richt, but he couldn't recruit a quarterback. So now you got a guy who has a quarterback on the roster and can recruit the hell out of not just South Florida, but the entire country. I mean, Kayvon Thibodeau, think about all the players he brought from out of state at Oregon to go play there. This is a great situation for Miami.
Yeah, and I imagine the average Hurricanes fan does not care that this is how it happened.
No.
They just wanted the final result. They don't care. They don't need to see how the cow is slaughtered to get the steak. They just want the steak at the end of this thing. You mentioned the major commitment in salary here. It's $8 million a year over 10 years for Cristobal, which seems to be all the rage these days, 10-year deals. This couldn't possibly backfire in coaches. Look at all the money being paid for buyouts. I'm not talking about Cristobal specifically. I'm just in general, college football spends money like it's nothing, and then they're going to pay the piper down the line here. A lot of these coaches are going to get extremely sweet buyouts because, as we see in college football, not everything works out how it's planned. But right now, everything's roses. $8 million a year, a ton for the assistants. Now, I read in your story that part of this is because Miami's U Health system was so profitable recently. Yes. $400 million in profits that made this possible. Does it get more American than this, that they're paying ungodly sums of money for a football coach based on their highly profitable hospital system? This seems like such a warped sense of priorities in our country. Explain this, though, the hospital's success in financing this.
Yes. Now, listen, this hasn't reflected well on Miami publicly. I think USA Today wrote a story, from what I understand. One of Miami's PR people reached out to me to talk about that, that, hey, we're getting this negative press, and to make a clear distinction that it's not, they're not taking COVID money to pay Mario Cristobal. That's not the way it works. The way it works is, hey, we made a boatload of money as a university, and they do have this health system, by the way, that they've had for years in the city, and it wasn't doing well for a while. Essentially, what Rudy Fernandez and Joe Echevarria, the two guys that President Frank put on this task of fixing the athletic program, those two guys and a couple of others turned Miami's poor profits around from the medical field in the last few years. This has been a progressive thing where all of a sudden the hospitals are becoming really profitable. So Miami basically operates three phases, right? The school, the hospitals, and then the athletic program. Well, they've never fed the athletic program because they're doing better financially, in part because of the hospital and because more people are pledging money, the Cuban mafia, as I like to call them, for Mario Cristobal. Now, all of a sudden, they feel like, okay, you know what? We're going to spend the money, but we also think we're going to make money. This is, in a way, certainly a gamble, right? Like, I could see us 3 years from now, if Mario Cristobal's got the same record as Manny Diaz, everybody wants him fired. I could see us in a very precarious position down here at Miami, where people are saying, well, you got all this money you committed. You're not making any money. Nobody's going to the games. You're not selling more merchandise. This is a gamble from the administration. That's why when some reports were coming out before that, oh, this is a guarantee, Miami every year they're going to spend $25 to $30 million in football. No, this is a pledge where they think this is going to spark the athletic program to become a national contender year in and year out and be the quote-unquote old Miami that is profitable as an athletic program. That's what they're doing. They're investing, hoping for a payback.
Well, if there's one thing I know about the Miami fan base, it's they are famously patient. and we'll wait this out, this success.
Right.
I think they'll want some results early. Let's talk about Cristobal himself. I watched some of his presser. He did the typical coach things. This team is going to be physical, and that is going to start in the weight room. They're going to recruit the footprint. Like, I mean, it's copy and paste from any of these new introductory pressers. Virginia Tech's was the same way, and fans eat it up. They hear the stuff here. But I look at his career path, and I'm just, like, amazed by it. He was once fired by FIU.
Yes.
Like, what a, first of all, what a terrible decision by FIU. Like, who do you think you are firing this guy, this local? He goes to Nick Saban's school for wayward coaches. He comes out, you know, laundered on the other side. He's great. He gets the head coaching job at Oregon, where he goes 35-13. He seemed like he had a pretty sweet deal at Oregon. But, you know, I've read all your stories. I read Bruce Feldman, obviously knows Miami well. He wrote a story thing the other day, and he wrote in there, it's a Kane thing. You wouldn't understand.
Yeah.
Was this the only job that he would have come back for? I mean, is that just part of his nature as somebody who's gone to Miami before? I mean, this the lure of this pulling him away from Oregon.
Yeah, I think without question, this was the one job he would leave Oregon for. Now, would he go to Alabama? Certainly, if Nick Saban were to leave him that situation, I think for sure. But now there's
12 guys lined up on that Alabama job that think they're getting it next. So good luck with that.
But he was a guy that people had mentioned for that Alabama job because he was there for 4 years with Saban and learned a lot from him. Like you said, graduated from his university. Look, Mario, this was the one job without question he would have left Oregon for. And it was hard for him, by the way. It was really hard for him. I talked to his brother Lou. I talked to his wife Jessica yesterday during the introductory press conference. And ultimately, you know, the Miami job, it was emotional for him. This is all about emotions. This is all about coming back, listening to your former teammates, all the guys that came after you, saying, please, please, please come save the program. You know what it takes. You know what a Miami guy is. You know what a Miami guy is supposed to look like. And between that and his family, I mean, look, his mom has been in the hospital now for a couple years. She was working up until she was 79 years old at Kendall Toyota, okay, working in the car sales industry until she was 79, which is where Mario gets his work ethic, by the way, where he's just relentless recruiter guy. But this was the emotional tug. Like, every time he went on vacation, it was back to Miami. There was no free time to go to Italy. There was no free time to go to Greece or Europe. Like, this guy, anytime he had a free moment, it was back to Miami with his wife and his kids to see his brother and his kids. And so it was all about family. And, you know, yesterday was such a special day for them. You think about Lou 35 years ago, a kid that was going to go to Harvard, right? That's where his parents wanted him to go. He was a smart kid, offensive lineman at Columbus. And Jimmy Johnson walks into the living room and says, no, I heard you can bench press 480 pounds. We want you at Miami. And by the way, he did bench press 480 pounds. This guy's ridiculous. Mario's brother, Lou. So he weighed 180 pounds in the third grade, by the way. So they recruit Lou. Mario's in the living room at the same time. And Jimmy Johnson says, I'm coming back for you in 2 years when you're graduating. And that was the story, right? It started there. And this crazy path, this is the fourth time now Mario will have taken a job or a scholarship from Miami. And so this is chapter four in that incredible story. And without question, you know, he was emotional yesterday. He fought back tears several times. He was playing catch with his sons. He was so happy to, you know, he told his sons, he's like, hey, you're finally going to be able to meet my Miami family, like my family, Kane. And that's why it's a Kane's thing. That's why Bruce's story was great as well. I mean, this is about coming back to where people felt they accomplished some special things. And so for Miami, it was a very emotional day. And I think for Mario, you know, this is just the beginning. I think he's going to do well here. I think Bitter, I think especially, look, he's the first coach who's going to have any sort of real support, right, in terms of assistant coaches, the school having your back. They want to see this work. Miami had to enter the arms race. They weren't going to ever get back to being successful. They were going to be a middling ACC team if this doesn't happen yesterday.
Well, I saw him a little clip of him speaking Spanish.
Yeah,
and it came pretty natural.
A little bit,
a little bit more of a local flavor than Brian Kelly with his fake Southern accent coming through. Look, came across a bit more genuine. Just to finish, put a bow on this Miami thing. I ask you this all the time: does this mean the U is back? Manny.
Oh, boy.
The
boy.
U is back.
They are not back until they're in the college football playoff where they win an ACC title. When that happens, can we just declare that the rule now? Can we just say the U is not back until they win the ACC or make the college football playoff? Can we agree to that?
I think we can, but it's not going to stop other people.
Right.
You know, Texas wins one game, and is Texas back? The U right. wins one game. Is the U back? It's just part of college football offseason. And I'm sure we'll talk ourselves into Miami winning the division next year. Looking at the division with all the coaching changes and the quarterbacks they're leaving,
yep.
I think it might make sense to pick Miami anyway, but it'll be interesting to watch. Wanted to shift gears here a little bit. Another coaching change within the ACC. A little bit of a surprise, perhaps. Virginia's Bronco Mendenhall resigned last week. Same day that Virginia Tech was announcing Brent Pry, the coach. It was later that afternoon. So I feel sorry for a lot of the writers that cover both Virginia Tech and Virginia. They think they're done for the day. Like, ooh, that was good. And then they're driving home and this happens.
Right.
And they have to write some other stuff. I was sort of surprised by this. You know, I've spoken to Bronco Mendenhall on a couple occasions. I do the state of the program for them every year. And I realize what a unique dude he is. And his whole life wasn't football. I mean, that was his work, but that wasn't his whole life. And he had other purposes in life than coaching. He made a great effort to get away from football every day, very family-oriented, wanted his assistant coaches to be like that too, not just like burn the midnight oil all the time with football. So I can sort of see why he did this. Still, I'm surprised by the timing. Were you surprised that this whole thing came down?
Yeah, I mean, I thought he, you know, look, I know they finished 6-6 or whatever it was, but I thought he was doing a good job there at Virginia, and I didn't know any of the underlying issues or what was kind of going on behind the scenes and why ultimately he decided to do it when he did, but you know, definitely a surprise to me. I didn't see it coming. How old is Mendenhall now?
Mid-50s, I think. He's been coaching for 31 straight years. I don't have his exact age with me, but I think it's mid-50s.
Yeah, but I think it just shows you the burnout that you can have doing this job, right? I mean, how invested you are emotionally and everything else. These guys, I mean, how they go 100 miles an hour at this job every day, I don't know where they get the energy from. I mean, Mario Cristobal says it's Cuban coffee and 2 hours of sleep is what he operates on. You know, look, for Virginia, I hope that the situation improves there, right? That they're able to get the kind of guy that they want to run the program. But look, Virginia is a tough place to recruit. I know that their facilities aren't great per se. Like, how are they going to attract the next coach? And what kind of job can that guy do to improve things? Andy, you're there. You could tell me better. But what's your impression of that?
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned the facilities, and that has been a sticking point, and that's something Bronco had been fighting for years to do. And they have this whole master plan of building this new football center, and I think COVID, maybe they hit the brakes a little bit on that, maybe not full speed ahead with doing that. But they need serious upgrades in that sense. But I look at what Bronco did for the program, and I think he took that place a long ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is a program again. That can be a reliable bowl participant every year, almost every year. And from what it was before that with, you know, Mike London, and they were struggling and they had some flashy recruiting classes that didn't do anything on the field. I think that he built up a very solid program and infrastructure there for the next coach. I'm curious, the 2016 class of coaches in the ACC, here they are. Mark Richt at Miami, Justin Fuente at Virginia Tech, Dino Babers at Syracuse, the last one standing right now, and Bronco Mendenhall. Who wins?
Mm.
Who wins from that class?
Well, Richt won the division. He got to the ACC championship game. Mendenhall obviously won the division.
Fuente won a division, got to the ACC championship game.
Yeah.
And Dino Babers is somehow the last man standing in this whole thing.
Yeah. You know, Dino has obviously such a tougher situation at Syracuse, trying to get that program back to where it was. Just the talent pool that they pull from is not equal to other parts in the ACC. But I don't know. It's a good question. Richt had the shortest tenure. I mean, is it Fuente? I mean, I don't know. Who had the better win percentage? That's a tough one to break. Probably Richt, I would say. His win percentage was a little higher. But obviously, you got to take into account Fuente lasted 6 years and Mendenhall. I thought he had them going in the right direction. I think Mendenhall ultimately accomplished more for Virginia than than either of those other two coaches. So I would probably give it to Mendenhall. I'm talking it out of my head here on the podcast.
Yeah. I was going to go with Bronco as well. I mean, they were 2-10 in that first season. He did the impossible, really. He took UPA to the ACC championship game. I don't think anybody ever thought that was going to happen with the way that program was going. And I think, I feel like his hire was kind of like Buzz Williams for basketball at Virginia Tech. And you can't think of two more opposite people than Buzz Williams and Bronco Mendenhall. But it's like he brought the program back.
Yeah.
Like the program was dead for a while. It was so irrelevant. And he gave those, they gave those schools, those programs back. And now whoever's next, Mike Young at Virginia Tech basketball wise, can build off of that. And whoever's going to go over to UVA, I think there's a pretty solid base there for possible success. He's not taking over a program that, you know, I think Bronco said when he got there, it's like 27 ACC caliber players. He, I mean, he said that out loud to people. I think I give it to Bronco. It just kind of goes to show you, though, that you never know how those hires are going to work out. I think in the 2016, everybody goes, year one, Fuente is the best. He wins the conference or wins the division the first year. The second year, Mark Richt is the best. He gets this team up in the top 10, whatever, it did 9-10 straight wins to start the season. Then Dino Babers wins 10 games. You go, okay, it's Dino Babers. He turned Syracuse around. Then they return to mediocrity. And then Bronco rises up. So, changes your perception, it seems like, every single year with these coaching hires. And the more that we think we know about these, it seems like the less we know about how these things are going to work out. All right, last thing I want to hit on here. We have a full bowl slate for the ACC. 10 games. The ACC is actually favored in 8 of them.
Incredible.
Which, you know, in the past, they'd always get a team in the playoff, and then another team would get pulled up into the Orange Bowl, and Notre Dame would sort of be in the mix. And they'd take, so it kind of bumped everybody up maybe higher than they should have been in the bowl pecking order. And this year, I feel like that's not the case. Pitt is in the Peach Bowl against Michigan State, so they're not even in like the premier New Year's Six game, not in the playoff or anything. And everything else kind of played out like that. So I think there's some, you know, better matchups for the ACC here, some even more even matchups. I sent you the list of bowl games. Give me a game on there that intrigues you that you want to watch here.
Well, to be honest, I want to see what Clemson does. I mean, they've lost their defensive coordinator in Venables. That's a huge loss. They could end up losing Tony Elliott as well, right? That's the other rumor, that the offensive coach could be leaving too. Their athletic director, Dan Radakovich, could be coming down to Miami. What is Dabo going to do? Can he keep his team focused? Iowa State was a pretty good team. They're not a great team. I think that's the most intriguing matchup. Iowa State's actually favored. Clemson's an underdog going into that game. So I would say seeing what Clemson does without Brent Venables is probably what I'm most interested in.
Yeah, that was the one I would have picked too, just because it's like Clemson in a mortal situation. Like they're back with the normals for bowl games. They're not off gallivanting in the playoff. It's like, oh, you're off playing in all these great games. You're at the Cheez-It Bowl. The former Camping World Bowl, former Russell Athletic Bowl. I mean, it's been like 10 different iterations of sponsorships there. So, yeah, I think I'm interested to see that one, just especially because of how hit or miss Clemson was this year, especially offensively. And Venables off to Oklahoma. How is that going to happen after that? I mean, this is like a critical stage for Clemson and Dabo. Mm-hmm. And if he loses both coordinators possibly, how that program continues on after, you know, the quote unquote down season. Well, what are they, 9-3, something like that? Like every other team in the ACC would kill to have a down season like this.
Like Clemson's, yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's probably the one I would choose as well. I think this Pitt Michigan State game could be fun.
Yes, agreed.
Because it's kind of two teams that nobody expected to be in a New Year's Six in this situation. So I always enjoy seeing teams get there because I think they enjoy it. And maybe there might be fewer opt-outs in those games because, like, we never thought we'd be playing in a New Year's Six game at the end of the year, whereas Ohio State is disappointed to be in whatever bowl game the Buckeyes are playing in this year. I think you'll probably see a lot of opt-outs in that one. I think if I was choosing another game off of that top line, I think maybe NC State UCLA is kind of interesting to me because the Holiday Bowl is the first time the ACC has been in there.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm being totally honest, I really wanted Virginia Tech to get into that game. I've never been to San Diego. I would love to get out there in San Diego. UCLA is just an interesting team to me. Chip Kelly is always going to bring some attention to that program, and you know, provided he doesn't go back to Oregon. I saw some lines the other day that said that he was perhaps the favorite to go back to Oregon for that job. I don't know if any of that's going to happen, but just the betting market's like that. But you know, NC State, pretty good year. UCLA gets back to a bowl game. It seems like they're kind of turning the corner. I think that one could be interesting as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, the matchups aren't bad. Certainly, you know, I mean, you look at the spreads. I mean, it's 3 points or less for almost all of them. UNC, South Carolina, I guess, is a 7-point spread. The Tar Heels are favored. And then Wake Forest, A&M, that's a touchdown for A&M favorite. Everything else is under three points or less. So I'm hoping there's exciting games to watch, and I'm hoping the ACC wins a few. Because, Andy, I don't know if you believe in this or not, but I really feel like the bowls, while we don't, well, obviously, there's a lot of change sort of happening, guys skipping the games, you know, to enter the draft or coaching changes. Somehow, some way, that stat of whatever the ACC does affects next season, right? Don't we always talk about it, right? Like, how did the ACC do against the other Power Five conferences or the other conferences? If they do well, I feel like that helps in the preseason rankings a little bit, right, for them. So if you're an ACC fan and want to see the ACC do well, these games do matter from a perspective going into next year.
Well, I think they'll do better than 0-6, like they did previously in a bowl season. That's not the way you want to go out for the ACC. But Manny, you will get a fun trip to El Paso. Ooh. Great Mexican food out there. Yeah. Interesting game against Washington State. I will be freezing my butt off in New York in the Pinstripe Bowl, covering Virginia Tech versus Maryland. You've told me to bring a coat because it's an open-air press box, I hear.
Yes.
Could be
Stadium.
An interesting game. New York is great. I love New York in July, yes. December less so. So this should be an interesting one to go up to.
Yes. And I would tell you, make sure you bring the gloves. And the gloves are the most important. Because when you're sitting there trying to write at 11, well, what time? This is an afternoon game.
2:15 game at
least. Yeah, you may get the benefit here of actually having the sunlight out there to keep you a little bit more warm. But the last time I was there, which was Mark Richt's final game when Miami got absolutely destroyed by Wisconsin, it was the dead of night, and it was in the 20s, and we were sitting there with everybody was just freezing, trying to watch the end of that game and just run downstairs. And so I hope it's a much better situation for you than it was for me last time. Although I will say the last time I was at the Sun Bowl, or the two times Miami has been at the Sun Bowl, it snowed both times. So I have a feeling I'm going to be freezing in El Paso. You will be freezing in New York. But, hey, we're going bowling.
I was going to say, you hear that? Those tiny violins that fans are saying, oh, you poor sports writers have to get an all expense paid trip to these bowl games. You poor sports writers. Well, Manny, I wish you luck in your bowl game adventure. Everybody go follow him on Twitter at Manny_Navarro. Lots of great Miami stuff there. I'm sure it's going to be continuing as Mario Cristobal fills out his staff. Manny, thanks so much for coming on the pod.
Thanks for having me on, Andy.
All right, everybody, that's another show in the books. Thanks for joining us. Please go rate and review us on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. That helps us get the word out on this podcast so other people can listen to it. Subscribe to The Athletic. You can listen to this podcast ad-free there. Go to theathletic.com/ACC pod. That gets you everything on the site in every sport. Lots of great content there. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at AndyBitterVT. I think we'll do another one of these next week. Maybe go through the lines a little bit more specifically on these bowl games and talk it out. So listen again next week. We'll talk to you then.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.